Good afternoon. Well, for me, the miracle of watching Swami all these years, I came in 1969, and forgive me, my voice is a little rough, I'm getting over a cold, has been that it has never changed. All the outward forms changed, the people changed, the work has spread and grown. We have Diana here from India, Shivani here from Italy, people from all over the world. Eugenio, I said your name wrong, from one of Amanda's students, from Anashini's students from Venezuela, from all... Oh, Argentina. Excuse me. Thank you. Anyway, all over the world. But really, from the very first day that I met Swami, that I arrived at Ananda, that I set my foot on this path, in a certain sense, nothing has changed. And that is, for me, the miracle of Swami's life. He knew where he was going. You know, my brother said something to me interestingly recently. He found out inadvertently, I didn't want to tell him that I had become Anaya Swami because my family already thinks I'm crazy enough, but he found it out through an email, and he said, "Oh, did you get a promotion?" And I said, "No, I didn't get a promotion. I got a demotion." But I said, "I didn't want to tell you because I didn't want you to think you think I'm crazy enough." And then he got very serious, and he said, "I don't think you're crazy." He's 4 years older than I am. He said, "I honor your life. You knew what you wanted from a young person, and you've never wavered. And very few people can do that." Well, multiply that by 100 times, and that's Swami's life. And I want to touch on 4 different aspects that I have seen as like bands of a rainbow that have started at a point in time, spanned a certain number of years, and now come back full circle. And those 4 points are: 1, his vision; his ability; 2nd one is his ability to involve people; 3rd one is his teaching and his example of giving your life totally to God; and then conclude with devotion and discipleship. And so the vision. You know, he told us this morning, we heard how from a young childhood he was seeking the truth behind the shadows of this world. And then when he read Autobiography of a Yogi, he knew that was the key that would blow away all the delusion, that he was grounded in truth. And his vision from the very beginning was communities and seeking God. His name, Kriyananda, joy through action, joy through the practice of Kriya Yoga. And that's exactly what Ananda is, this movement of Ananda. And from the very beginning, that vision was there. I remember the very first summer we were here, and it was rough and tumble, and no buildings, no meals together, no water systems, no road systems, no electricity, nothing. But there was the vision. And it always felt, whenever you were with him in a class or a satsang, there was like a wind blowing from behind him, filling his sails, and that boat of his life was going to go very far across this ocean of delusion. And we would have meetings, and he would say, "Now, how are we going to live through this winter? We don't have any housing." And someone said, "Well, I just read a book about the Indian teepee." "Great idea," he would say. "Let's build teepees. We can live in teepees." And someone said, "I know where to get poles." And someone said, "I know how to sew the canvas." And there was this movement, this momentum of a vision. And here at a gathering recently, he was saying, "And we're getting land in a new community in Portland and a new community in Los Angeles. And we're doing movies and we're doing a new television show." And it's always, always, that vision has never stopped, as he did with Padma. Not that it's never enough, but until it's the totality of what can be done, we keep moving forward. And so from the very beginning, and also, you know, we had a forest fire in 1976, and the community was burnt to the ground. And someone recently, Bajrang, somehow found a tape of him leading a meeting right after the fire. There we were, sitting in rubble and ruin and ashes. And Swami, his voice was clear, his vision was strong, and he was just, it could have been a meeting talking about anything in the world. There was no regret, no attachment. It was simply, how are we going to survive now? What's the next step? And everyone, with that calmness, with that vision, with that wind behind his sails, there was never a thought that we wouldn't survive. Not for a moment. We had no insurance. We had no money. We had no homes. We had nothing. A girl, Durga's mother, called after the fire, 1976, and she said, well, did you get the furniture out? And Durga said, no, Mom, I didn't get anything out of the house. Burnt up. Well, did you get your papers? No, Mom. Did you get the family jewelry? No, Mom. And then finally her mother was going on, and Durga stopped her, and she said, Mother, think about a handful of ashes. That's what I have now. And yet, Swami's vision carried us through that time. It never faltered. And it's carrying us forward into the future now with the sense that nothing is impossible. Nothing. As long as we are willing to keep in that flow of that wind of the vision that came from Master that has filled Swami's sails. The second point I wanted to touch on is, and I think for me, this is, I think it's his genius, is his ability to involve people and make everyone feel that they are central to Ananda's work, whatever it might be. From the very early days, I remember Nitai is here. Nitai said to Swami, and Nitai came from a background in education and teaching, and Nitai mentioned to Swami, Swamiji, we have children here and there's no schools. And Swami said, you know, you're quite bright. Why don't you start a school system? And he said, well, how can I do it? He said, well, Master wrote a few things. Just do that. And I remember once I was living up at the meditation retreat, and every night different people would lead an evening meditation and satsang. And I went to Swami, you know, we're so dumb in the beginning. And I said, Swami, these satsangs aren't very inspiring that people are leading. And he looked at me and said, oh, really? Then you lead them. And you know, it's that, but, and even the other, in the last couple of days, remember Swami has told us that in Sri Yukteswar, even in the last couple of days of his life, he was taking on a few little young disciples. Well, in the last couple of days in this week, one of the sons of a family that lives here, a boy that was born and grew up here and is now going off to college, he came to have an interview with Swami, and Swami he said, you know, you have a very good mind. I want you to work on the project of creating a monetary system for Ananda. This is a 20-year-old boy, you know. And then we were having a gathering the other night, and Chrisman, I saw him. There's Chris. And Swami, I was sitting next to Swami, and Swami said, who's that man again? And I said, Chris. He said, oh, yes, I remember him. And he said, Chris, come over here. He said, I want you to design this poster and this book cover. Chris is a graphic designer. And he just gave him all these projects to do. And my heart was so happy because he never stops looking for the new person. How can they be involved? And why is that important? Not that these projects, don't misunderstand me, not that these projects are not important in and of themselves, but he knows that if people take on something, then Ananda becomes theirs. They're not sitting with their nose pressed against the glass. You know, before I came to Ananda, I always, before I really found the spiritual path, I would watch life, and I would always think, why are people so excited about all this? And I always would feel like I had my nose pressed against the window, watching everybody run around like chickens with their heads cut off. And I just couldn't figure out why. Why are they doing all this? And then I came to Ananda, and talk about chickens with their heads cut off. But really, it, for the first time, and Swami said, do this, do that. There were many times he said, I want you to do this, I want you to do that, giving me things to do, and no more was I sitting on the fence. It was for the first time I thought, now I'm on the other side of the glass. This is my life now, and I never felt it till he began giving me things to do and letting that energy flow through me. So, involvement. The third one that I want to talk about is the totality of self-offering. And he has not only taught this, but he has lived it every moment that I have known him. I remember 1977, he was going across the country giving what we called the joy tours. The fire had hit Ananda, as we were talking about. We had no money, no insurance, no way of rebuilding. What was Swami's response? Expand. We're going to go on a national tour, and many people sitting in this room are a result of those national tours that he met and touched their lives. And we're going to reach new people, and we're going to get the message of Ananda out. The perfect solution. But I remember one night we had joined him in Minneapolis, and he came down with a very bad flu and fever. And the others went to the program, Jyotish substituted for him, and I stayed back where we were staying at the home of a friend, and I took care of him, high fever. And he kind of at one point in the night said, you know, I feel like an old war horse that's just worn out in the service of his master. And that was 1977. I mean, of course he recovered. But that totality of self-offering, I do remember the very first lecture I ever taught. And you know, that's something else. I love it. He said, I never lecture. I don't teach. I share. And there's a lot to think about in that difference. Lecturing, you're talking at people. Sharing, you're talking with people. And that's what he's always done. But in the first sharing that I heard, he said, and I was new. I'd read half of the autobiography. I'd gotten 20 of the SRF lessons, was, I think, up to the point of the third energization exercise, you know. And but Swami said at that talk, he said, make no mistake, God will ask everything of you. And honestly, friends, I almost got up and walked out at that point. No, I'm not to my credit, but I thought, I just came here to do some yoga postures. I didn't come here to give my whole life to God. But you know what? I did. That's why I came. I just didn't know it. And he awakened that in all of our hearts. None of us would be able to dedicate our lives to God to this extent without that total self-offering. And then the years have gone by. And how many times, I honestly cannot count the times I've seen him get up from illness and surgery and fevers and exhaustion and heart problems. I have a lecture to give, and he would do it. I remember once in India a few years ago, he was feeling quite ill. He had a lecture to give at noon, and he asked Jyotish, and I said, you'll need to substitute for me today. I simply can't do it. We said, fine, Swami, whatever you want. And then we were going to leave the house. It was about 11:45. We were staying at Guru Kripa, his house. And we were just about to leave, and all of a sudden his bedroom door opened, and there he was, fully dressed. He said, let's go. And where he found the energy, I'll never know. Well, I do know, but it's amazing to watch it. So that total self-offering. And then he started the Naya Swami Order, which made it so clear for all of us. From now on, I embrace as the only purpose of my life the search for God. And you know something? We mean it. And how could we have meant that without him? We never could have. And recently he gave one of the Thursday night satsangs. If you haven't listened to those, they're all recorded and they're on the internet. Do listen to them. But he said, he was talking about the fear of giving yourself to God and all the things that hold us back. And he said it with such power. He said, just throw yourself into the void. That's the only way you'll be free of ego. And that image has just been reverberating in my mind. Whenever I start feeling, oh, no, I have to hold that for myself, or, oh, no, that's a threat to me, I just think, throw yourself into the void. And he's lived it. He's taught it. He's given us the power to do it. And that brings us to the last point, his devotion and his discipleship. That's the wind in his sails that enables him to do it. From the very beginning, it was the teachings of Master, the devotion to Master, the music for Master, the plays for Master, everything, everything. It's always been about that. And recently, at one of those satsangs that in these last weeks, he was telling us, sharing with us, he said, you know, a reporter or an interviewer asked me recently, what am I the most proud of in my life? And he said, I'm not proud of anything. I haven't done anything, as Jyotish was saying. And then he paused. And he said, well, there's one thing I'm proud of. I'm proud of all of you. And I thought, well, I'm glad for that. But he's given us, through his discipleship, Master's living presence. And what we can do now, he's a warrior for God. There's no question about it. But the living presence of the Master will never die because of that one great disciple, Swami Kriyananda, who has planted that living seed in our heart. And all of us will go out north, south, east, and west to spread the message of self-realization and the power of the Guru through the efforts of this one man who said, I will not fail you, Master. And through that vow, he has given each of us the path to freedom. God bless you.